Sometimes a guest comes in and they sit down and before even saying hello, they've opened up and we've started talking like old friends. There's an element of trust to that which I never take for granted. And it has to do, I suppose, with the fact that many people feel safe when they come here to talk to us. One of those people was Louise Carver. We thought it would just be another interview and we'd catch up with her and speak about music, but she opened up about getting into a toxic relationship of 3 years. She's very in touch with her emotions. She told us how she learned to embrace what life threw at her, and she knocked Rihanna off the Billboard charts, was about to travel again before this discussion. But if you feel like hearing what a real person, who's also famous, sounds like, it's worth listening to Louise Carver.
This is CliffCentral.com.
The beautiful Louise Carver is here to see us, so we'll bring her in. Wheel her in. Let's take a look at this great...
Wheel her in.
This great South African treasure. I really do love her. She's terrific. She's got a good sense of humor. She's extraordinarily talented. And she has done so much for our culture. She's done so much to contribute to music in South Africa. And she is so versatile. She's one of those people who can just do it all. So Louise Carver once confessed that she was a major rebel and she hated school and authority. That's another thing I have in common with her. She's the second of three siblings. She was born in Cape Town and she started playing the piano at the age of 11. She signed her first record contract at 15 and released her first album, Mubs, at 17. You remember It Doesn't Matter? That was her first album.
Yes, we do indeed.
She was 17. So all those people who are getting into music in their 30s and 40s, you underachieving loser. It's never going to happen for you. Get over it. Give up now. Quit while you're ahead. Louise Carver has proven that you are a disaster before you even started.
Oh, this is delightful. Yes. So what about my career at 22?
It's never going to... You and Mrs. Miller, it's never going to happen.
Never mind.
Here she is. Hello, Louise Carver. How are you? Yeah. You don't have to.
Oh, good.
You don't like headphones.
Not
you wear
really.
Them so much.
Yeah, I don't need it. I don't need it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to see you. You're looking as fresh as ever. What's up with you? You in the joys of spring? First day of spring today?
I think I'm in shock of getting up this early and no traffic on the roads. I actually made a cup of tea for the journey. It was tricky because I was planning on sitting and drinking it and I was going over speed bumps. Oh. I like to challenge myself. So I'm good. I'm excited.
Why are you surprised? You often come to Joburg.
No, I live in Joburg, but I'm used to traffic in the morning, but I don't have children, so I have no idea when kids are in school and not in school.
Aren't you
so
lucky?
Aren't
you lucky?
Yes, I am.
You have friends who have kids. Do you ever get jealous of them?
No, never.
She didn't even pause.
I think they get jealous of me, to be honest. I think that motherhood is not for everyone, and know the difference, whether you are going to be a mum or not, and just be true to your journey. And mine's always been adventure, travel, music, learning, educating, having fun, really.
Are you having fun?
I really am.
Is life for Louise Carver really fantastic right now?
Yeah, it wasn't a year ago.
Why? What happened a year ago?
I was in a really awful relationship for 3 years. I got myself entangled in with a narcissist, with someone with narcissistic personality disorder. And it didn't start that way, obviously, but it ended up 3 years later in a very broken human, which makes for great music. But I don't need
you were
to do
the broken
again.
Human or he was the broken?
Oh, I was a mess. No, he was a very abusive, verbally, emotionally, a real big ex-rugby player bully. I suppose the only regret I have now is that you look back and what you accepted during that time and you just can't believe it's the same person. But they're very cunning. They are very manipulative. It's a game that they know how to get you to. It's a chess game really for them, so I found myself in that, but I'm a year out of it and my life is good again. You know, I feel energized and happy, but it surprised me. I have a lot now of empathy for people that are in abusive relationships where I don't think I had that before. I thought, just get out, what's your problem?
Oh, right.
And actually it's something, because I studied it afterwards, I had to understand what had happened to me, and something changes in the physiology of your brain changes so that you actually become an addict to a person and not a substance. And I remember thinking, You just need a fix of that person's approval, that, and you're walking on eggshells. It's that whole thing. And I never thought something like that would happen to me, and it did. So
yeah, because you, I mean, you're intelligent. You're world wise. You've seen a lot. You've heard a lot. You read a lot. You pay attention.
I'm financially independent. So correct. You think women are just with certain men. It's not just. Yeah. It's by no means just men that are abusers. But you think that it's just for financial reasons? Shame the woman can't get away. She needs, or she's got kids, or it's not at all that. I had it all. I've got all the independence. Well educated.
So when you're, what is it that when you're in it, you just can't see what?
It's like taking small doses of a poison every day and not knowing why you're suddenly getting sick over a long period of time, not understanding why your energy is being drained, because it happens so slowly in small little increments, where what you, when you started out, what you you would never accept, but it's a slow poison where you just, at the end, you're accepting public rages. I remember being in the business lounge in the airport and him losing it, and I thought this, and me finding it almost like, okay, how are we going to placate him? Just keep it calm in front of people that know me.
He's just having a tantrum, like a kid.
Tantrum, because I get stressed around airports. I inherited that from my Mr. Faulty father. And I was like, oh, I think we're going to be late. I had to drop a piano off at Yamaha, and it was just silly. One of the many stories of his rages
did
and disciplining me.
Did you feel like it was your fault a lot of the time that he was behaving like this? Like, yeah, for example, it even sounded a little bit there like, you know, you get a little anxious in airports. A lot of us do. And that somehow when you were in that moment, you thought, oh, it's all my fault.
Yeah, you do. You think, what's wrong with me? Why I was attracted to this person is it's usually because there's something missing in you that you're looking for in somebody else. And with me, I was missing, to be honest, fun. I'd been working, as you said in my bio, I was signed at 15. And was a very serious child living in Cape Town going, I don't want to be in Cape Town. I'm not really getting this whole thing. I just want to be in a city that functions and can, I'm just all
can
about.
Help your career.
Help my career. Yeah. So I want to get out as quickly as possible. Everyone's trying to get in, which has been the story of my life. And then was.
And having a music career, look. You know, it's not like you were a child star, but you certainly had elements of that, because when you're a musician and you take your music as seriously as you do, and it absorbs you in every way, you tend to be very isolated. Am I right?
Yeah, you do.
And you're a workaholic.
Yeah.
So you would sit there and you'd write and write and write and write and write and perform and perform and perform, and you would be a stickler for this kind of thing. I mean, we've spoken about this before. You've got a bit of an obsession with detail.
Very much. And it can haunt you afterwards when you haven't. I've relaxed a lot since this. That's why, you know, things are a blessing in a
twisted way.
In a twisted way, yes. I really don't recommend being in an abusive relationship.
But hang on, what I'm getting to, and we've got to talk, this might be useful and helpful to a lot of women who are in a similar situation. So I'm glad that you're open and honest about it. But to go back to you for a second, so you're in this situation, you want to make a success of your life, you're focused completely on your career, and for good reason. I mean, it's delivered incredible results for you, and you've done incredible things for music as a result.
Thanks.
Everything's worked out, right? So what is it about, were you not able to balance things?
No, definitely not.
Is that where you felt you had this gap for fun?
Yeah, I had no fun and not realizing it. All my social life was going to those events, which you know about, which are soulless and superficial. And I thought that was my going out fun time. That is not fun. That is work. That's
did
an extension
you drink?
Of working
did
day.
You take drugs?
No, I did drink, I'm not going to lie.
But excessively?
No. There was a moment when I came to Joburg and I was hanging out with some other well-known musicians and trying to keep up with men on the drinking level, which is just for a
which
small
is
woman is
a big
is,
mistake.
It's a mistake. But that was about a year when I first. No, I mean, I enjoy wine. I always have. I'm not shy about that.
Sure. I'm not intimating you're an alcoholic, but people do that when they want to have fun.
Escape as well.
South Africans, we've got a culture of this. That's what people do.
We do, yeah. I think I was missing. I was hanging out with other men and that were also in the entertainment industry, which is very, you know, it's not, they're also on the make, focused on their
sure.
career. Or older men. I was dating a lot of much older men that
Well, this is another thing, is you're pretty and you're talented. So for a lot of men, that's a huge turn on. So I'm with Louise Carver is kind of a great thing to be able to say, whether you're a musician or just an ordinary citizen. And I reckon for a lot of guys, you must have been a bit of a prize.
I never was conscious about that. It's hard, but you may be right, and very possibly. But I met this very spontaneous, big old jock, kind of very way out of my norm, and I found it exciting. And what was initially spontaneous behavior became very reckless behavior, and that's how.
Okay, but then where in the relationship do the alarm bells start to go off? Because there must have been signs early on, especially now when you look back. Maybe not in the moment, but now if you look back, you go, God, I didn't realize that, but that was a giveaway.
No, I actually wrote an article for Glamour Mag because I couldn't have all this knowledge after I had managed. I had an intervention to get me out of it. My mom flew up from Cape Town, mm-hmm. and I had a psychologist that I was actually sent to by my ex for my jealousy issues, which I'd never had before and I do not have now. So it's also part of the narcissistic personality to triangulate you with other women. In his case, it was an ex-girlfriend. So he had sent me there to get a hold on my issues. And that's also a red flag. If you haven't had an issue like that before and only during one relationship, there's a red flag there. But honestly, and this is what I have to live with and forgive myself for, there were red flags from pretty much the first week.
I don't think there's anyone who's ever been in a relationship who doesn't look back and say, oh, okay, I could have been more aware of that.
And that's what the article was about. It wasn't like, oh, this happened to me, poor me. It was like, right, okay, it was more aimed at women because it was Glamour Mag and I'm friends with the editor. So I spoke to Panina and I said, I've got this story I want to share. I can't live with all of what I've learned now about narcissistic personality disorder and just like go, oh, well, it's like I need to share this. So the article was very much right. These are the game. It's like I studied game theory in politics. So there's set games that they play on people and they work.
Can we talk about narcissistic personality disorder for a second? And again, sure. Neither of us are psychologists, so you've had experience of this, but you might be able to shed some light for people who are complete pedestrians when it comes to this stuff. All right, so I understand narcissism to be the name comes from Narcissus, who used to look at his own reflection in the water over and over again. He was in love with himself. So these people have a massive amount of self-worth and no self-critic.
Yes, but it's a pity that word is derived from that Greek story.
Vanity.
Because it's not really that. Narcissism is...
That's an intro. Now you tell me what it really is.
Okay, because I thought it was the Kim Kardashians doing the selfies, putting the duck face selfies. So I wasn't alert to it. I didn't know what was happening. I knew I was in a mad situation. I knew the rages were terrifying. I knew that his... It was rages. It was funny things that were being said that were triggering things. I didn't know what I was dealing with, but I knew it wasn't normal.
There's a bit of paranoia in there as well.
Yeah, there's a naughty. It's not even naughty. That's too soft a word. It's like teenage behavior. It's like you're with a teenager or a small child not getting their way. So narcissistic personality disorder. Therapists are not sure if it's nature or nurture, but they think it's a bit of both. So it's in you have a disposition that it's sitting there in your DNA, maybe not activated yet. And then there's triggers. Now, the thing is whether it's triggered by neglect in childhood or
overindulgence.
And in my case, this person was overindulged, the rugby star, the second coming kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
So he was, everything was indulged.
His parents thought he was Jesus.
Yeah, pretty much. And so did he. And so these people have developed no empathy for another person. So it's almost on the level of it's classed as a behavioral disorder, but it's almost on the level of psychopath because there's no ability to feel for anything. It's all about their needs. They take no responsibility for anything they do, and they're highly, highly manipulative. In the category of narcissistic personality disorder, there's quite a few different types. The one I was with lives off other women. He lives off women. So he cannot hold a job down. Incredibly lying about his past. Grandiose. So will say things that are I own the nightclub when he worked at the nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone would say, and it's only happened once, like, oh, I know the owners of this.
And I'd say,
I'd say, you can't say that out in public. So it's grandiose behavior, massive mood swings, manipulative. And the key things is they love bomb you. So it's a set thing. And once you get it, you are very unlikely to be conned. And they're very charming, very good looking people. And so they've learned these are the steps. They love bomb you. So your relationship moves very quickly, unnatural speed. So if you are a little bit lonely, like I think I was very popular but very lonely. And that's a weird thing for you to understand. But everybody, I'm at all these parties, but I'm lonely.
I get that.
So I was
susceptible. Go home on your own afterwards and you have a lot of time to sit and think on your own.
Oh. And your friends who are not.
It's my favorite thing in the world, by the way, but I understand that it could be loneliness.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's how you write. You can't write. Oh, I'm not a person that writes music with other people around me. Right. I very much have to understand what's happening. But yeah, so they love bomb you. And then, so they'll be talking about 5 years down the line kind of thing. And you're only a month in. So your red flag's already going off there. And then they'll do the first discard. And then they want to see how quickly they can hoover you back. Hoovering back means little messages. Maybe a Facebook like or calling and then you come back and then they know they've got you. And then that's the discard. I'm leaving. I'm out of here. And they're just testing you the whole time how much you can handle. And then there's triangulation. And then there's something called gaslighting, which is slowly confusing you. They like to operate when you're in a state of confusion. And they're everywhere. They're in your workplace. And the thing is, you have to realize that your end goal is to create peace and harmony in the house or in the workplace. Their end goal is to create chaos and to dominate. So you haven't
got
there.
To keep you unbalanced.
That's it.
So that you can't take control.
Yeah, so that's what I lived in for 3 years.
Jesus, it sounds like hell.
It was, but I was constantly trying to. And what I learned from the therapy that I had afterwards was, she said to me, Louise, your skills of seeing things through and being completely tenacious and dedicated are very good for your career. They are terrible for a relationship. You don't need those same skills in a relationship. You need to let go and go, this is not good for me. I'm out.
Because you think the relationship is some kind of value statement about you.
Mm.
And if it doesn't work, you fail.
I failed. Yeah, and I don't fail. And of course we fail. And it's not a failure. And as soon as she turned that light bulb on in my head, so sometimes therapists can be very useful, and I clearly needed it.
Absolutely. But listen, this proves the point with so many people that no matter how clever you are, how successful you are, how financially independent you are, what kind of a great family you might come from, we could all do with a little bit of therapy.
Yeah, we have patterns that start, I don't know, maybe even in the womb. And I think my pattern was not actually that self-confident. I have a strong belief in my work and my future performance, but my self-esteem was actually really low. So I didn't think people wanted to, deep down, and I think a lot of entertainers have this, you think that people are only with you because you've got a successful career and not because you're just you. And because I started so young in music, you have a coping mechanism and a coping personality to go out there. Even when you're feeling terrible about yourself, you've still got to go out there and that's professional. But somewhere along the line, you confuse the two personalities and you think, well, who are people friends with? That person that's on the whole time or me? But you've also lost you. So I figured out the difference. Well, I was taught the difference between self-esteem, which I always thought I had massive self-esteem because I'm a confident person, but that isn't. That's just the belief in your ability to perform. And self-esteem is what you really think about yourself and what you, just your self-love. And I think if you have a low self-esteem, you are a huge potential target for abusers and manipulators.
Mm-hmm. How long into the 3 years did you start seeing it for what it was? Because you say it started almost immediately.
It did.
And were you the one to recognize it, or did it take people around you to say, Louise, this person is bad for you, he's abusive?
No, I wish people had. And my parents are of the generation called the silent generation, so they really don't think they need to interfere. It's a private matter between.
She's doing her thing.
Yeah, they didn't like him. They thought he was incredibly arrogant, which he was. But they didn't interfere. And my friends, one or two, were like, but no one said anything. So I knew there were some particular moments where I knew I was dealing with madness. And I don't know if anyone's in this room has experienced madness before, but it's not just having an argument with someone. Mm. There's madness that's happening. It's almost like they are, I don't know if you've seen someone having a fit or an animal that's having some kind of rage on its own, and you're like, Jesus, this is on its own. It doesn't need anybody else to.
Loss of control.
Loss of control, that's it. And I saw that a few times, and I thought, this isn't me or what I've said. This is a dominating move to make me scared. So I understood what was happening, but I was just trying to make it better. And it was only when it got so bad that my producer of my latest album, Mark Beeling from Mean Mr. Mustard, he initially was like, geez, this guy is awesome. He's a legend. He tells you what to do. And he's like, you know, there's that camaraderie between males that, like, he tells you what time he's coming back from the pub.
He's the alpha male.
Wow. And then after about 6 months of Mark and I working together and me kind of coming in after another late night of didn't know where he was or whatever, he started to get what was happening. And near the end of the album, he said, you need help. And I need you to call your mum and get your mum up here. So
now, when someone you trust says that to you, most people screw up the reaction. Because your reaction should be to just quietly think about it and consider all the options and go, well, maybe they have a point, and not take it personally and not think of it as a failure of your own.
Mm.
And when someone says you need help, to not imagine that that's some weakness in you.
No, I was desperate by that point.
You were ready to
absolutely
take help.
Absolutely desperate. I was in autopilot. Okay. I didn't know if I was coming or going. What they do is they break up with you, but not to really break up with you. It's to discipline you. You mess with me, this is the result. And you're so invested. That's the other thing. It's like throwing good money after bad. You've put all this time and you've made yourself so small that to just walk away after everything you've given up of yourself, which you should never do in a relationship, you just think, so I must walk away now after everything I've done? No, I'm going to see this through. But I got to a point where it was so bad that Mark said, call your mother. And I said, Mom, I need help. You know, I'm in my 30s and you don't think that you would have to call your mummy. And she got the next flight up and she came and she fed me for literally eat. I was such a mess.
Were you also really thin? Were you depriving yourself of everything?
I don't know if I was coming or going. I think I was coping on wine.
Physically weak, right?
And confused, which is wonderful for them. They can really operate well. I was about to give him $500,000. And that's how you get under their thumb.
Gee.
I had that in my bond. So that was what he was trying to gun for. And I was such a mess that I was about to do that. So that alerted my parents. And so they're gone on. But you need help. And that's the thing. There's no pity story here. Believe me.
No, I don't get that impression at all.
You need help. You can't, when your brain is now like an addict's brain.
Yeah.
Because that's what the therapist said to me. If he was to call you now, if you were to see him, what would you feel? And I said, relief. She said, that's what a heroin addict feels when they get a fix. They know it's not good for them. They know it's going to lead to problems, but they can't think beyond. They need that relief.
That's where you hear about these toxic relationships.
And
right?
I was in one.
Now, the process of leaving, how does that weigh down on you? Because I think a lot of people will say things like, well, just leave him. And in very extreme cases, some women do leave and then they are tracked down and they're killed for leaving.
Yeah, that's the other aspect.
I mean, in the most extreme cases, obviously.
Yes.
So the process of leaving, like, how did that weigh down on you?
Well, I was guided through that process. I had fantastic help from this particular therapist that knew exactly. She knew what I was dealing with before I knew what I was dealing with, but she was gently trying to.
Had she ever seen him?
She had seen him, yeah. He had come. And why a narcissist will go to your therapy session, this is what women and men need to understand. They'll go and you think, yay, they're on sides. They go to get information about you and to find out where you are vulnerable and weak. They're there sitting, information gathering. So if you say, like I did, my mom said when I was little that I was a selfish girl because I have a very strong mind. And my mom had said, oh, Louise is such a selfish girl. And that had stayed in and done some little, you know, a little bit of damage. You know, it's what happens.
No, these are things that affect us. We don't even realize.
As a little worm. Yeah. Like, I'm a selfish person. I probably won't have any friends. And I told the therapist that. And
he pulled it out of the arsenal, right?
This is not the Louise Carver show. It's not always about you. And what they do is they deflect. So you're saying, listen, I think it's on a Tuesday night, coming back drunk from 4 o'clock, knowing I've got a big show the next day, and you're living with me, maybe not such a great idea, and you're trying to have a normal conversation to try and have a normal relationship, it's not going to happen. They'll say, they will totally create a fire somewhere else so that you're taken off there and you're defending yourself.
Wow.
So it's really worked out. There's no, it doesn't take much energy from their side. They've done this fandango quite a few times, but for you, it's new because
yeah.
you are doing it authentically and trying to get a peace and resolution in your relationship. That's not their goal. They're trying to get you confused and feeling bad. So they get energy from that. So it's a very interesting thing. And it was a Pandora's box that I opened. It's sad that I went through it, sure. But I can be a great friend and I have a lot of empathy for people and addicts, actually. Because there was a little bit of arrogance being in the music industry for so long and seeing a lot of people that have unfortunately have been addicted to drugs or alcohol. I've always had that little bit of like, meh, it's not been me. And then this was my addiction. It was a person. And I didn't even know that was possible.
I wonder how many people even realize that they could be addicted to a person.
Mm. And it's not that they're particularly special. It's not like you're with, not just to be derogatory, but it's something they create with their actions over time that gets you hooked on them, pleasing them, walking on eggshells. It's not that they are that exceptional. They just know how to play you. So the thing is, what I learned from this experience, many things I learned, but you have to be a full person that is really happy and confident in who you are and what you can give and before you can go into any kind of relationship. And I have fun in my life now. That's why when you ask me that question, how are you? I can honestly say I'm good.
I'm so happy because it's a breakthrough. But it must have been great for music.
Yes.
I hate to say this.
It's so true.
But pain and psychological torment
it was.
Creates beautiful music.
You go into the depths of your darkest places. Yeah. Louise, and it is my best album, I'm going to have to say.
I'm sorry for you, but...
Sorry for you. But hashtag stuff. Sorry, but not sorry.
No, it's incredible. What kinds of stuff came out of you from a music point of view that you didn't expect because of what you were going through?
Well, there's a track on there that says "All the," which is titled "All the Lessons," and when I wrote it as I walked away, and immediately went into Mark's studio and I said, "We have to do this. I know we finished the album, but we've got to add this on." And it's still guts me because it's so so honest about what I went through. But the songwriting flowed during this album. And I also got back to where I started, which is a singer-songwriter. There was no... it's a timeless album.
Yeah, because there's such pressure to fit in with what the trend is, right?
And I totally didn't do that on this album.
Like people want you to be a Katy Perry because then you'll sell more albums.
Yeah, and it actually turns out that you don't. If you're not being who you are, people can smell it. Yeah, and they think, meh. And so I have two careers though, Gareth. I have a fantastic singer-songwriter career here in South Africa, and then I leave for New York next Wednesday. I've got two shows in Boston. I had a number one Billboard hit last year with Bloody Sunrise.
Brilliant. Yeah.
That was such a surprise. And I'm doing the follow-up track. Well, we've done it already. I'm shooting a music video next week. It's called Crazy Enough. working with Dirty Vegas. And I've just been asked to give a talk in Berklee College of Music next week.
That's fantastic.
So it's a good life. And I think I finally stopped comparing myself to other people's journey and going, this is your unique journey. You're not going to... very possibly have the picket fence with the... There's that weird thing, especially if you're brought up in Cape Town and Constantia and your friends all did the thing, the two children and the... There's a small part of you which has now died out, and it's a wonderful dance that you can do inside of yourself when you go, that's not me. And you're having an imaginary race with things that are not even... You're not even in the race. You're on a totally different race. You're playing... hockey and they're doing, swimming.
This is music to some people's ears, I reckon.
Oh, good. Because when you just get out of that, you're not meant to be in that race. You're in your own race. And so you keep thinking you're losing, but you're not supposed to even be in that race. So that's happened this year.
What a life. I mean, this sounds to me like you've got everything going really well at the moment. It's a
hard one. Really. But those are good stories when you literally pull yourself out of the burning building and you're like, okay.
But do you think this will impact on relationships going forward?
Definitely.
In a negative way or in a positive
way? I'm not in any way going to just go into a relationship. I'm very cautious. I'm watching. I'm highly alert. I'm highly alert for red flags. Too much alert. I can see it.
But no one's going to live up to this for a little while.
No, I'm not. I can't. What I went through and what a lot of people, I can't just go into something else. And I found myself, it's a little bit of that moment where you've just discovered who you really are and you've fallen a little bit in love with yourself and you don't really want to give it to anybody else just yet. I'm quite happy.
That's self-actualization. Isn't that what we're all hoping to get to? Yeah. And sometimes this is the thing that people don't understand, and I don't even understand it properly. But I've heard it said, and it makes sense. You have to do some of the painful, difficult, complex, hard stuff to figure out the good.
Mm.
And you know, you have to forge something in fire and iron for it to really work. So in other words, if you are leading a life which is painless and easy and without any challenge, it's not a life.
And no reflection.
Because you don't know yourself. You only know yourself when you're at your lowest or when you're at your most threatened.
Yeah, to see, can you get up and move forward? And that's what I learned to also do something else. Coming from very British parents, they come from the Second World War, kind of post-Second World War. Mm-hmm. They had me quite late. They're 70, 71. And they were just happy to have a roof over their head. England, kind of just after Second World War, to have food on the table. They got oranges for Christmas, as I was told. You're just lucky.
Oh, we had it tough.
Oh, oranges for Christmas. Ooh, it's a good Christmas. Jeez. So what happens from that is the silent generation, as I've learned, because I had to try and understand my parents, They emotional stuff wasn't really discussed.
No.
Because it was just we managed to put
generation.
You through to school.
English people don't talk about their feelings.
No, because it's almost embarrassing. Pull it together. So my mom flew up and I had about a week of mourning where she made me porridge in the morning and sliced banana and eat. And then after a week she flew back and that was supposed to be it. That was, now we've wrapped it up. We've got you out of that toxic thing.
Patted you on the head and said,
"It's done. You've
now
eating,
you're fixed. You
have
can
food,
go.
And now it's done." And then seeing this fantastic person every week, she taught me how to feel. And I think I've always channeled my feelings into music, but everything else has been like, "Hello, hi, yes, I'm fine, it's good." My music was like, "Ooh, there's a whole different story going on in what I'm actually writing."
You were all emotion. I've seen you sing before, and you really pour it all in.
Because that's the only place that I learned how to do it.
I kind of got the impression afterwards that you were very polite and you were very friendly, but you weren't really there to make friends.
No.
you weren't there to connect, you know?
No.
You were doing the right thing, and by no means do I infer that you were insincere. That's not it. All I'm saying is that you were kind of...
polished.
Yeah, you were emotionally in control.
Mm-hmm. But in the music, you'd pick up something else.
Yeah, the music, you're like this fiery, crazy, passionate, hugely like fragile almost person, because you can hear it in your voice too.
So that's actually coming from a family that you do stiff up a little bit. And then later in life, figuring out that the only way through something is to genuinely feel it, to cry in a public place if you feel like crying. And it doesn't last that long. I was so afraid of actually tapping into that grief. That it builds up, so that as soon as you feel it, as soon as something wells up inside of you and you feel it, it actually only lasts for a couple of minutes. So if you're in the traffic and you suddenly go, "Ugh," and then you go, "Oh, no, wait, put a happy song on," or it's just going to be clocking the hours for when you really have a proper breakdown on the kitchen floor, and rather just have a cry in traffic. Who cares? You're never going to see that person again.
But I mean, what if you're in an inconvenient space, like at
like
work?
Like a lift.
A lift. It's not good. No.
With four other people in the lift. Can you imagine?
Have
how
you got
awkward.
Sunglasses?
Just a little tear trickles out.
I don't want to be in a lift with a woman who
who's breaking down.
No, it's just to not run from it, and to it's like diffusing something, and and it actually works. I was so afraid to feel, and then when I started to feel, it wasn't as you, okay. So you're at home and you're having a good cry, and it's not as long as you think it's going to be. You think, God, am I ever going to stop crying? And then you stop crying. You're like, oh well. And this is the English side. Let me just have a cup of tea.
Yeah,
let me just make some tea, have a nice bath. It'll all be fine.
And we're all overly concerned with what other people think instead of how we feel.
That's true.
And this is insane because
that's codependent as well.
I mean, I'm like that a lot. You won't see me crying. You don't see me getting emotional easily. It's not going to happen.
But you do get emotional.
I am an emotional person, but I'm not emotionally accessible, right? So what happens is that I do what you said earlier. You just kind of, well, let's get on with it. Come on, there's no need to do anything here. But if I did start, you know, emotionally acting out in public, I would be very embarrassed afterwards. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And that's, I think that's partly because I'm putting too much value in what other people will think rather than dealing with my stuff. Not that I got piles of stuff either, but this is just a normal human experience that all of us can go through, that many of us don't because we're so worried about what Mabali is going to think or what Sia is going to say.
Yeah,
stupid,
I'm not.
Right?
I'm not. I mean, although we've come a lot of steps forward, and I think it's also got to do a little bit with being in entertainment, and just you have to develop another personality in a way to handle all the pressure that you're under, and to be this incredible person, and not say the wrong thing, and be a well-groomed pony.
Well, people think you have a superpower, and then they start to invest their values in you. They start to create like a basket of things that you aren't, that you start to represent for them.
Mm, that's it. And so then you start to think, who are? Where?
Start thinking, maybe I am that. Maybe I should try harder to be that. And it's impossible.
No, it's impossible.
Because you're full of frailties and you're full of humanity and normal, sometimes negative behavior.
Yeah.
You got to accept that, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Now, this has been a good therapy session.
Sorry, it was actually meant to be promoting my album.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, this is the lovely thing about Cliff Central, is you just bring whatever's on your mind.
I love this. This is very honest. So tell me about the because this is your sixth album.
Yeah, sixth studio album, seventh album.
Still with Gallo?
I was with Sony for many, many, many years, which was great. And then I was independent firstly with Silver Tulip Music when I was in Cape Town. Then I signed to Sony for many years, had three albums with Sony. And then I went independent. And then I've got a happy marriage now between Gallo and myself, where I pay for the album. So I own, you know, the music, and I've got nice deals with them that helps get it out there.
Yeah, distribution
nice.
And
yeah.
stuff. But isn't it it's shame? I feel sorry for these record companies now. I don't want to be horrible, but they are not what they used to be.
No.
And they're sort of trying to hold on to the glory days in some way. I meet people from record companies and they talk about how it used to be.
I think it's
sad, right?
I think... To be a musician now is very different to when I started, when you were taken in by a record label and, you know, you had budgets. Once you were signed, it was done.
Great.
I'm in. Now it's basically, I'm a business, Louise Carver Inc.
Uh-huh.
And I have done a joint venture with a company that can help me in certain areas, but by no means I go, and now this is me. This is the beginning. Making the album is...
And you actually have, in some ways this is great. Certainly it was easier to sell music in the 1990s and 2000s. Sure, you would have made far more money, but out of sales.
Yeah.
But now you have the power.
Yes.
So in some ways you go into a negotiation with a record label, and before it was so unkind and so unfair, and they had lawyers and they had experts and they had
boardrooms with long tables.
Yes, and you'd sit there.
I remember those. Oh,
so you went to some of those meetings, and how different is it now?
It's totally different. You're co-pilots in a small plane.
You say to the record company, "I'll meet you at a coffee shop, and you get the bill."
Yeah. No, probably the artist is getting the bill at this stage of the game. It's fine. Don't worry. I've got it. No, it's very different. And you're right.
The tables have turned.
You're right. That with every situation, I've learned this. There's good and there's upsides and downsides. So, yes, the downside is not many people are, we're doing iTunes and all the rest, but very little actually ends up in the artist. I had a number one last year in the States. My lifestyle has not changed. That says something. It was a number one through downloads and streaming. It's dance music.
Yeah.
So people are, wow, number one in the Billboard charts. Yes, I have the plaque. It's hanging in my office.
That's awesome. What a thing
it's
to have.
Awesome. Though. I know. Cause I paid for it. It was very expensive. but it's mine.
We, it's like anybody who... You know, listen to music in the 80s and 90s. If you were on Billboard, you were a superhero from Mars.
This is my superpower. I knocked Rihanna off the charts. She was I was number two. She was number one. So I got to do it all again. But it's so much fun this time around because I've been asked to speak at this at Berkeley, and I was thinking,
what are you
sitting
tell
in the bar.
Them?
Well, it's my life. They want to know my journey. So Joe Bermuda's organizer, my producer in the States, he said, look, because we're in Boston, they heard you coming and they want to want you to come and speak. And I thought, okay. And he said, just keep it natural. I'm not a professional speaker. Sitting in the bath and I was thinking, what angle am I going to take here? And then I thought, the journey of a musician is so... it's constantly changing. And where I'm at right now... I'm really enjoying the journey, not just the destination. Through my 20s, I was like, what's the end goal? How are we going to get to this? And now I'm like, yay, I'm going to New York and Boston. It's like, what are you wanting to achieve there? I don't know. I know what I'm going to do, but I'm really going to enjoy it. Why do you have to wait till your 30s to start enjoying things? And 20s are so bright. Okay. And also you don't have that much money in your 20s. So you budget and it's aggressive. And it's like, I need to get that interview with like, and the more.
Sarah's going to cry.
don't cry.
I'm like, oh Lord, this is my life.
No, it's going to get better. That's why I'm here.
I need to fast forward. Okay.
No, don't fast forward because you will get it when you get to your 30s, mid 30s. You will. The joy of my life now is the more I've taken my foot. I'm as focused as ever, but I'm enjoying things more. I'm not so aggressive with the accelerator pedal, and I'm getting things that are coming to me a lot easier. I got a call the other day saying, we're putting you on radio. I'm on Boston Radio, Massachusetts Radio. Joe organized an interview for me before the show on the 8th of September, and I never even asked for it. And that's the difference. I was so pushy. Like, okay, I need to try and get a radio interview. I didn't do anything. And then it came to me. And it doesn't mean that my focus is not off. I'm just less aggressive with it. And it's nice. I'm happy I'm here.
That's a flow.
It's a flow. Yeah. And if I didn't get it, I'd also be okay with it. It just wasn't the right time. I'm not going to sit out and lobby the radio station. It just was like, would you like to come on air and do an interview before your show? Yeah, that'd be lovely. Thanks.
Did you like doing that TV stuff? Because you hosted a couple of episodes, Top Billing and some other stuff.
No, I didn't.
Didn't you? You didn't?
No.
You've done some TV work.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. Someone said that to the other day. Don't you want to get into TV? Nope.
Not for you.
No. I'm a musician. I don't know.
Hurry up and wait. Television's very frustrating.
Yeah. It's very smoke and mirrors. So is the whole industry. But with particularly with Top Billing, it's a painful long day. It's a long day if you're an interviewer. And it doesn't give me... I like being interviewed.
But there's
to
no
do
satisfaction
it as a job. No,
it.
Zero. Nothing. Okay. No.
Well, no. Yeah. People immediately assume, well, she's talented, she looks good on camera, we could put her on TV, and that's what they think you should be doing. It's like every good-looking kid gets told they should become a model or an actor. You know how it goes.
Well, I was never said to me, but thanks.
Were you an ugly child?
I had sticky out ears, like that.
Yeah.
That's why I believe in plastic surgery, because I could never... I would be a hypocrite if within reason. But I had my ears pinned back when I was 7.
Did you?
Thank goodness. I mean, I was
called
big
bad?
Ears. Yeah, totally bad. I mean, I'm trying to think of an example of who had like really rugby player bad.
Stick out like
sticky
Will
outy.
Smith.
Yeah, but his are small.
I'm just trying to picture you with enormous
sticky
ears. Right now,
head.
I'm just picturing Dumbo.
No, seriously. And Dumbo was cute. But but it wasn't going to lead me to an entertainment career. So if I didn't. So my mom, and I had braces for 3 years and headgear. So let's just.
Headgear as well.
Yeah. And I used to, oh, it was horrible. And I had a little Dracula tooth. When I closed my mouth, the little tooth stuck out. Oh. So, yeah, it was,
okay,
it was
a
challenging
youth.
Okay,
you were an ugly child.
Very skinny and very, very white. And I've had, Lyra is a good friend of mine. We've had lots of conversations about this. Growing up kind of same age, going through the totally different experiences, being both South African, but totally different experiences. And I said, I had white racism. And she's like, what are you talking about? I said, I grew up in the 80s where you had to be blonde and tanned. Oh. Tanned. You do not show your face. I'm Capetonian. You cannot get on the beach with, there was no Nicole Kidmans. There was no, none of these like beautiful pale. I was really ridiculed. Why are you so pale?
You make a good point. And white people use the word pale as a pejorative about other white people. You know, she's very lovely, but she's very pasty and pale.
Yeah, pale. Yeah.
Just, so pale. Those thighs, terrible. Cellulite, pale cellulite, very bad.
Very bad. And Shane, what's wrong with you? Are you so white? Why? And
I was sick.
And only because Nikki Greenwald and I went to school together, and so we were still, she's closer
cool.
than family.
Oh.
Always that little bit smarter than me. It was annoying. But we were best friends the whole way through. And I remember only in our final year, because she's also very pale and also she's blonde. I was very dark. But we were picked on. And only we were sitting around on my pool the one day and we said, we've got the perfect response. When someone, and it was just so simple. The girls, the blonde cheerleading types would come up and say, why are you so pale? And then we said, we're going to say this. Does it bother you? Just like flick the question back. We never got to say it, but I still remember when we had that epiphany. Don't come back with like, just try and get it. Why is it bothering you that I'm so pale? Because it was done. And then you had the self-tans that stank. So
did
that
you
wasn't.
Try those?
I did. Out of pure desperation. No. And then Nicole Kidman came on the scene and it was like, that is considered beautiful. It's amazing how powerful the media is for very pale white people and very dark African people as well. Had another battle. I know all the battles of through having many African friends and understanding there's a whole dilemma within that. I went to a Bobby
and hair.
Hair.
Yeah.
Yep.
You went to a Bobby?
I went to a Bobby Brown. Lyra's the spokesperson for Bobby Brown. So I was.
You mean the makeup?
The makeup,
not
yeah.
Whitney's
not,
ex.
No.
Oh, God. And my mind didn't even go there. No, Bobby Brown. And it was a long table. It was very interesting to be. It was a privilege to be a part of it because there was. I was the only white person there at this table. And it was Sonia Booth, Lyra. I'm just trying to think, Yvonne Chaka Chaka. And there was a whole table of very powerful women discussing, and Bobby Brown trying to instigate their issues with what's going on with, they had a skin kind of angle there.
Right.
And I quickly realized within 10 minutes into the conversation, I am completely irrelevant. They've got their own drama going on. It's got nothing to do with black and white anymore. It's got, I don't want to say it on air because I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say.
No, you're allowed to say whatever you want.
Okay, so it's, I'm sorry if I'm offending anybody, but I'll just say it's a yellow bone and
yeah,
darker
yeah, yeah,
skin.
Yeah. Oh, no,
thing.
We've talked about that many
okay,
times.
So that was the topic for like...
I know how hard it is to be a yellow bone.
Yeah.
I'm beyond. I'm like when the bones have been out there for like years and you find them in the desert. It's like, that's what I am.
Oh, girl.
So this is... But this is all about learning too. Just
yeah.
Like, just like you learn.
It's a dialogue.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone's offended by this stuff. If you have an interest, it doesn't mean that you have that interest because you want to, like you were describing your ex, get information to use against people. Sometimes it's because you don't want to be ignorant anymore.
Yes, that's exactly. I was totally oblivious to
that. Did they ask you to leave after a while?
No.
So they could get into the black conversations without
having
you there?
No, I just wasn't even... I wasn't even a feature, though. And I tried to, I piped up once and I said, hey, I've experienced what I told you guys. And they were like,
okay, oh, no.
Bitch, please.
You really, your hair is straight, you're pale, everything's going your way. I'm like, no, it wasn't like that. So I did not have blonde hair or tanned or any boobs for a long period of time. Even now, there's nothing to talk about. So, yes. But I have an ass, which is. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's kind of African.
Well, it is
we
very.
Have Beyonce to thank for that.
Yes. and Kardashians.
Yeah.
You know, but we'll go with Beyonce because that's at least
they came onto the scene and all of a sudden asses were acceptable.
Exactly. How sad is that? That we really are reliant on media as women to
for
say,
me,
yes, that's fine.
For me as a woman, asses only really became acceptable when Black China came onto the scene.
Oh, that's it for you.
I mean, wow.
That's a fascinating
that's
thing.
That's taking it to the extreme.
That is. There's a few others as well.
That you mentioned Lyra is a good friend of yours.
Yes.
You guys see each other a lot. Do you do fun stuff? And then people go, oh my God, it's Lyra and Louise Carver.
Depends where we are.
Okay, yeah. So it happens.
Depends where we are. If we're out somewhere, then...
Obviously, not at each other's houses. No one would know.
But we've been friends. We had the same management team from, I think she was 21. We were 25. I just come up
to Joburg. Who else are you friends with? You're friends with...
you got a list there.
Loyiso?
Yes. I'm actually doing Loyiso a show Bana. Next week, I think.
All right. Craig Hines?
Yes. Worked many times together.
Are you still friends with Mark Beeling?
Very good friends. He's one of my specials.
Because he's the one who told you to get help?
Yes, he is. We've great mutual friends. He's not just telling me to get help daily.
You and Emmanuel, you guys still friends?
We dated for 2 years, and we are pleasant. There's no animosity.
Okay.
If I saw him like I saw him at that charity Young Milan show.
You're not going to run up to each other and say, you bastard.
No. He's a lovely human being, and it was a lovely 2 years, but it came to its natural end. Season, reason, lifetime.
Right.
Yeah, done.
And that's also something we've all got to learn to do, is when it's not working anymore, let it finish.
That's why marriage is such a strange construct, mm-hmm. because it's like, it's nature. It's and we're done. Yeah. And then like, oh, but we're not done. We've got to go through a whole legal thing.
And people live so long now that it's unnatural for us to be with one person because you should both be dead.
By 32. Right. Done. If you're lucky. Most of
our lifespans used to, average human lifespan, if you got into your 40s, you were old.
And actually not that attractive because there was nothing to like sort out your issues, the ears, the teeth. No. I would not have got lucky.
Thank God you had a
I would have had pity.
Now, what about this jewelry range of yours? How's that going?
Oh, thanks. Very well. I opened a shop 1st of May in Parkhurst.
You're wearing it now?
Yes.
Nice.
This morning, early, scrambling for things.
You can have a look at the picture when we put it up later.
Yeah, I've been doing it for 9 years. And it was as simple as...
Do you design or do you actually make?
Yeah, I design. No, I do not make.
It's hard work to make. It does damage to your hands,
I've never made anything. I have it made. I have small people to do that stuff for me. But yes, I do
a
design.
Chinese sweatshop?
Small people.
Is it a Chinese sweatshop?
They're very young. But I pay them well.
With nimble,
in sweets.
Teeny, tiny fingers.
Sweets. I pay them in sweets. No.
Please, Miss Carver, have one night off. Be working 78 hours in a row.
This is not a charity shop.
Little bless,
keep going.
It's very hard to put diamond in.
This is not my problem.
Is there money in jewelry?
Yeah, there is. And fun, actually. And something different.
Okay,
and so I
need
that.
Did you do this because you couldn't find jewelry you liked?
No, I saw a gap in the market and an opportunity came up. I was looking for another thing outside music. I was heavily embedded with Sony. And when you are in a 360 deal, pretty much, you can't... I'm a very free spirit, so it was hard and discipline. It was a big discipline to be with a major record label during that time when they mm-hmm. did have a lot of power. So I think my natural entrepreneurial spirit was looking for something, and I thought I was actually going to go into lingerie, ooh. And because I love lingerie, beautiful
Louise's
lace and
lingerie.
Things. Mm. Yeah, love lace or something. I don't know.
Hey.
So, and then I was at one of these big functions that we do, and this guy came up to me and said, we've got a wholesale shop in northern suburbs in Cape Town, and we'd love you to wear our wholesale pearls and just come into the factory and just choose some stuff and just wear it. I went in there, I flew down, and I thought, oh no, this is like granny stuff. I could never. And as I was leaving, I thought, you know what? There's a whole factory here. I can start designing and getting my own Louise Carver collection. Initially, it was called Jingle and Chimes. And then a fellow celeb said, you need to use your name. You worked very hard on this. Right. Why are you not bringing attention? So that's how it started. It was really just... and then I started designing pieces what I would wear on stage. And it grew from there, and it's less pearls now.
You'll
working
get to
now
the
with
pearls
Turkey.
When you're 80.
Yeah, there's a whole nother market for that. Gin and pearls.
You still got the Scottish Terriers?
I have Elvis, yes. He's 13. Grumpy old Nazi. He's very, he's really ridiculous. He's so grumpy that he's in, he's out, he's not sure, he's, now he's this new thing. I was telling Mark because I was in the studio on Tuesday. But I think all Scottish Terriers are narcissists, actually. They're dogs for people that don't need a lot of attention. Because if you look, getting a pet to be cuddled and stuff, don't get a Scottish Terrier. They do not want to be held.
No.
They're working dogs. They were there to go and get badges in British farmlands. That's what a Scottish Terrier was for.
And the rescue dogs? You got two of those?
Yes, I got Fern, I got a Yorkshire Terrier, and then I have inherited from my ex, we got a, he was insistent on getting a pit bull. So that wouldn't have been...
That should have told you everything as
well.
Well,
yeah.
Not because there's anything wrong with the dog, let's make this clear, but the kind of people who usually
why
like
are they drawn?
Pit bulls.
Yeah. But she is my baby now. Her name's Marley. And what people don't realize about pit bulls is, firstly, they're just a notch above other dogs in terms of intelligence. They figure, I can see her working through things. If I've closed a sliding door but I haven't locked it, the other dogs just sit there, wait for the door to open. She gets her... really interesting pause to get in there and slide it open. Huh. And I saw that quite quickly. There's a little bit more intelligence there.
So the other two dogs are dumb.
Yeah.
Well, they're just... can't say that about my pets. I love them. But she is a very... So anyone that... they're an amazing breed and they're fiercely protective over me, which is not a bad thing. Especially I go running, I go jogging in Delta Park and she's right there. The others are all about finding a bone or a poo to eat or something disgusting. She's like, Mummy, I've got you. I'm right here.
Wow.
And so I love the breed now. I love the breed. I've never been a breed that I would have got. But
well, listen, I hate to draw this to a close because we've actually had a lot of fun.
But have the, it's, the album, been, it's been up and down.
No, come on. I've had a lot of fun.
I love
the album is out when?
It's out now on iTunes. It's called Hanging in the Void.
Very good.
Which is the feeling that astronauts get when they see Earth for the first time. So Hanging in the Void is that first sighting of the Earth as a planet, not so seeing it as a planet. And that feeling is called Hanging in the Void. So it's messing with perspectives
this
and
is you seeing things.
Clarity.
The big picture.
And ego taking a break.
Yeah.
Which is really lovely. But you can't force these things. So whilst you're still in your 20s, you have your ego. And then it takes a lovely, it's there, but it's not so dominant driving things. Yeah.
Hey, listen, enjoy New York.
Thanks.
Enjoy Berkeley. That's going to be fun.
Sure, yeah.
Let us know how it goes.
It's a twist.
And hopefully we see you again soon.
I'd love
that. Always good to catch
up. Thank you for your time.
All right, love it.
This is CliffCentral.com.